This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and we're legends in our own mind.
That's right.
Speaking of legends,
we're outstanding in our field.
We are joined today by Dick Rutan. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning, Fast Eddie.
For those of you who don't know who Dick Rutan is, he's the brother of Bert Rutan and the one of the two pilots that flew the first aircraft nonstop around the world.
That's right.
Without refueling.
Well, yeah, you have to stop to refuel. Is this not true?
Well, you could stop for directions.
No, they didn't do that either. That's why he took Jenna.
In 1924, the first airplane to fly around the world, and it was a couple of Army biplanes. It took them 6 months.
Wow.
And then the first nonstop flight was right after World War II in an airplane called the Lucky Lady 2. And the Lucky Lady 2 went around the world, but they cheated.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. They did the very first aerial refueling. And they refueled five times. It took them 96 hours to get around the world.
Well, you know, I often thought if you could just take off and hover for 24 hours, the Earth would spin under you. Doesn't that count?
I think you have to be in space for that.
Yeah.
Oh, darn. And that's where my theory falls to the ground.
Yeah, I've heard that before. He says, well, why didn't you just jump up and let the Earth go around?
You tried it. It didn't
work. You know, I was playing with some kids one day, and I like to talk to kids. And we asked them, if you're going to fly around the world, which way do you go? And somebody said, they're all going to vote, see, for north, south, east, west. And then they finally figured it out that the world really is just a sphere. And they're pretty sharp and realized that, hey, no matter which way you go, as long as you stay in the same direction, you can't not get back to where you started.
Right.
So that's why I say it's really easy to navigate around the world. So just keep going the same direction and then keep flying until you look up and see something you recognize. You don't even have to navigate. So anyway, all these kids were doing this, and there's always got to be a kid. His name, we'll call him Johnny. And he stood up in a very loud voice, and he says, yeah, you can go north or south, and you can go east, but you can't go west. And I thought, well, I want to know, okay, yeah, Johnny, why can't we go west? And he looked and he says, because if you go to the west, you'll run into that wall right there.
Oh, jeez.
I love kids. They come up with the most incredible stuff.
They do.
Anyway, it's really good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. It's great to have you.
You know, I remember looking at the Voyager sitting at the Air and Space Museum, and I'm thinking to myself, how the heck did two people sit in this thing for, what was it, a 10-day flight or something like that?
That's right.
And cohabitate.
The worst part, there was no one to clean the bathroom.
I was going to say, you know, how do you take care of basic needs, you know, like food, water, sleep?
And I think the scientific term here in Wisconsin is, that's recognized and authorized, and that word is tinkle and duty.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That would work.
So that was sort of definitely in the design constraint somewhere.
Well, you know, the other thing too is you're in basically, I won't say a tin can because it was composite, but for all intensive purposes, you're in this tube for 10 days. You've got two roaring engines, one in front, one in back. How the heck did you keep your sanity for that long?
Well, that's a good question. I wonder about that myself. No, a couple things. The psychology of that was interesting because here an airplane was carrying 3.6 tons of fuel. And since carbon fiber is such an incredibly strong material, the primary structure of the airplane was only 926 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. It was that light.
So if you think about 926 pounds of primary structure to carry 3.6 tons of fuel, plus two people, a little bit of food, some avionics, two engines, landing gear, and those types of things. So that really speaks very well for carbon fiber. But to get back to your other question is... the human being seems to be very adaptable to that. And after a couple of days out, this was this is my home, like the Stockholm syndrome.
Right.
This is my home. This is what I do.
And my world is this big.
Yeah, and you're relatively busy, but not so busy that you're fatigued. In fact, it was a very nice... the two things that get fatigue is being bored and sensory deprivation. That is really the horrible thing about fatigue and so forth. But if you're mildly busy, not over busy,
yeah,
then that's fatiguing also. So, and the Voyager was just about the right combination of those two.
Now, you had to think about all that in the design phase, didn't you?
Right. But to hear an airplane has to fly at a specific speed, a dead nut speed based on its gross weight. And of course, the heavier it is, and to get that efficiency, you have to go faster because it's heavier, you need to create more lift. And then as it burns the fuel off, you keep slowing down. And it was ridiculously slow to start with. But then towards the last half of the flight, we were going so slow, the birds were passing us up, laughing at us.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, we had to beef up the trailing edge of the wings to
for bird strikes.
Yeah,
yeah, from behind.
Wow. No, but that was our home. And I would sit there, and I could not remember that I had a car and a house. And there was other people that lived on this earth. And they would go to movies, and they'd go out to eat and so forth. And that was just seemed like a different time that I had no experience of. It totally, completely separated.
Well, you've never, and no one had been in an airplane that long, I guess. No, that's not true, but yeah, it's...
Well, one that small.
Yeah.
Besides that, there was a male and a female on board.
Yeah, whole nother dynamic.
And they were, their relationship had deteriorated to the point they weren't talking.
Okay.
And maybe that
might have been good.
Think about that. Maybe that was good. I don't know.
Yeah. That, wow, it's tough to work together in such close confines.
Right.
Anyway.
But the thing is that we were really busy. And
yeah.
And here's another thing that we found as far as hunger and thirst. The body has different needs. If you don't have any water, you get thirsty, and your body tells you. You think about water or food, the same thing. Your stomach growls and you want to have some food. Or if you get sleepy, you get sleepy, you yawn and say, wow, I need to go to sleep. And then you can go to sleep and have, a normal sleep cycle where you have dream and non-dream sleep. And then you can wake up refreshed. But if you're in excruciating pain, as an example, then all those things are suppressed. I mean, you can understand that if there's a big truck on your legs and you're really in agony, that you don't think, well, hold on a minute.
I'm going to take a nap now.
I think I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
Or I can go to sleep.
Yeah.
But something we didn't realize until we learned the hard way is that security, the same lack of symptoms happen exactly when you're not secure. And you're not hungry, you're not thirsty, it's almost impossible to go to sleep. And then interpersonal relationships about somebody's squeaky little voice or something that gets on your nerves, all those things are suppressed too. And even though you're comfortable, and if you're flying an airplane, it'll come apart just easy. Any little turbulence, the thing's going to come apart. So you are deep in Maslow's second order. It's called security. And therefore, sleep is really difficult. And the senses for hunger and thirst are not even there. So you can't depend on that. So on our shorter flight, our 4.5-day flight, we never ate anything, we never drank anything.
For 4.5 days?
Well, we never thought we could get around the world, frankly. And we thought that the current absolute record was held by a B-52, and they only went halfway around the world. So our goal was to not just break a record, we had to double the darn thing.
Yeah.
In that category. So I thought, we never make it around the world, so this is really a neat airplane. So why don't we just go ahead and at least get on the record books that we hold an absolute record. And that's pretty neat, too. And if you break an absolute record, you know, three people in the high desert with not two nickels to rub together, that's a pretty neat thing. And so we went out to do that.
Then you did it in spectacular fashion.
But we learned the hard way. We didn't realize that all our things were going to be suppressed. And we landed extremely dehydrated. In fact, Gina passed out right in the middle of a press conference. And I got to look at the color of my urine, and it was like molasses.
Yeah.
And I says, hey, Doc, what the heck's going on? And he says, Dick, I says, I've been trying to tell you this for a year and a half. I says, well, George, you have my undivided attention.
Exactly, exactly. Wow.
You know, you went through this deal, you landed and everything. How long did it take for you to recover from the effects of food, sleep, and water deprivation?
When we landed after the flight, they were taking some film in the ambulance as we were going in. And, you know, here we are a week and a half with no sleep. And I looked at that guy, he, you know, unshaven, and he had a couple of steaming, wet, hot towels. Ah, boy, did that feel good. And the eyes were sunken, and Gina lost 10% of her body weight.
Oh, my goodness.
And I tried to get rid of every ounce of my body weight before takeoff, and the guy made me put on 4 more pounds, and I lost all of that plus some.
Wow. That's something you wouldn't even
think about.
Anyway,
to answer your question, I went to sleep and slept for 18 hours straight.
Wow.
And got up and was facing another world that I was not ready for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you changed it. You changed it. Yes, you're going to be on the field, and we can talk to you in person. But that was radio professional, wasn't it?
Oh, you did that well. You aced it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we're just about out of time here. So you're going to be at flight booth from 11 to 12 today in Hangar A.
Dick right. is going to be at the cruise flight booth, which is in Hangar A at 1007, which is right in the very back portion of Hangar A. He'll be there from 11 till 12 today. We invite everybody to stop on by, say hello, and maybe even get an autograph. Dick is actually going to be one of our guest speakers on the cruise as well, so we'd love to have you stop by.
I'm definitely going to stop by.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time. It's kind of an aviation cruise, and yeah. So you get to hang out with...
with you.
Well, with me, and I think we have an astronaut on board, too.
I think we have three.
Nice.
Right. So
nice.
It's going to be a lot of fun. If you like to cruise and hang out with aviation people, this is a great opportunity.
Sounds great. Thank you for joining us, sir. This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.